Out with the old and in with the new. While Blakey is away on tour, Podcast McPhee steps up to host and has a special guest all the way from the Americas, Marcella Smith. Don't worry, the GRQOTW wasn't missed, and we also hear Marcella's four most commonly misunderstood rules, as well as a couple of her own clubland stories.
So whether you're in your car or going for a walk, enjoy this episode of the Golf Rules Questions podcast.
Stuart's one of our highest ranked working rules officials that we have, one of the best we've got, and he knows his stuff.
Hello and welcome to the Golf Rules Question podcast, episode number 98. We are getting very, very close to that milestone of 100, which will be a fantastic achievement for this podcast. Blakey is away doing what he does best, and that is working for the Asian Tour as a referee, having just finished the International Series England event, and he's currently in St Andrews ready for this weekend's event as well. Well, this is Stuart McPhee here, which is I'm normally the other guy on the Golf Rules Question podcast, but it's me today in the driver's seat, ready to run ahead with episode 98 today. With Blakey away for a few weeks, I've decided to take the driver's seat and run with the Golf Rules Question podcast, but you cannot do this podcast on your own. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Blakey's very good friend and my new friend, Marcella Smith from The Girlfriend's Guide to Golf. Marcella, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here. You said Blakey's away doing what he does best. And I don't agree that that's what he does best. I mean, he is very good at officiating, but what he really does best, honestly, is backward flips off of a boat in Lake Tahoe.
Well, I think, is that on your Instagram page? We'll have to take your word for that, I think.
Well, I think what he does best is explain the rules. And he has tutored me to take my USGA exam, which I did a while back. And he's a phenomenal support for anyone wanting to understand, comprehend, and conquer the rules of golf. And that's what he does so, so very well. So I'm sorry he's not here. I was on episode 50. And I was hoping I'd get to be on episode 100, but here I am at 98. That's all good.
So what you're saying is I have very big shoes to fill today in the driver's seat of this podcast.
Definitely.
Okay. Well, I will do my best. I do actually have an agenda for today. We will answer last week's golf rules question of the week. We'll do that in just a moment. I'm going to actually hand it over to you as well. You do a lot of teaching on the course. A lot of beginner golfers as well, just getting into the game. I'd be very interested to hear from you about your experiences with that and what you see as some of the really common, very, very common rules misunderstandings. And if you can able to share that with us. We have some clubland stories. They're all from you as well, some of your experiences. And I know a lot of people writing to you asking for you to help give the ruling on a particular situation. So you have some of those. One's a very good one that we'll share with everyone today. I'm actually going to go through some of the community questions on Blakey's YouTube channel. We'll go through some of the answers there and actually provide you an insight into what percentage of people got those correct and incorrect. And then I'm going to hand over to my special guest today, who will finish us off today with the golf rules question of the week for this podcast episode number 98. Well, with all that said, I'll better just repeat the golf rules question of the week from episode 97. And Marcella, I think I'm just going to throw it to you without notice and see if you can provide the answer to this. The question is, Blakey and Stuart are playing in an individual stroke round at Wombat Hills. On the ninth hole, Stuart's ball becomes embedded in the putting green after his second shot. Not knowing what to do, foolishly, he asks Blakey, who jokingly tells him that he must drop the ball within a one club length relief area on the putting green, no nearer the hole. Well, this makes a lot of sense to Stuart, so he does just that. Blakey then notices Stuart's ball is on the green, away from the embedded spot, and with no ball marker down. Blakey tells Stuart that he was only joking and that you cannot get embedded ball relief on the green. How must Stuart proceed, and are there any penalty strokes to either player?
Yes, well, how many penalty strokes can we assess him for being rude and trying to trick you? I mean, that's got to be like a DQ thing for intentionally trying to manipulate and trick a fellow competitor.
I think that would maybe fall under the serious misconduct under rule 1.2 or something. The committee could probably look at that. But anyway, not today.
Yes, yes. But basically, it's just that one stroke penalty of the fact that he lifted his ball in play without putting a mark down first. And it's just a one stroke penalty. And then he has to replace that on the original spot or the estimated spot as close as he can get to the original spot and play on. It is just a one stroke penalty.
Yeah. So when he dropped the ball on the green, thinking he was taking embedded ball relief, and now the ball's effectively in play somewhere else, he is able to pick that up without penalty and put it back on the spot.
Yes.
Excuse me. Yeah. And so 14.5 says that. Sorry.
Right. 14. And you're going to have this accent all day. And it's kind of one of the reasons I like Blakey so much is the down under accent. 14. So the interesting thing, this is how it's going to go today, Stu. And can I call you Stewie? Can I call
of
you
course,
Stewie?
No, she works. Or podcast. No, not podcast. No, please not podcast.
Yes. So you don't have an embedded ball on the putting green because there's no reason to, because you already get, it's such a lenient area. You already get to pick up your ball, clean it, reposition it, do what you want. So you don't need to take embedded ball relief under a rule. You just simply pick it up. You can repair that little mark and put your ball back down.
Yeah, so 16.3 under embedded ball relief. You only get it in one area of the course, and that's the general area. I listened to one of your webinars in the last week, and you just used the word then, and it reminded me to say something. You used the word lenient, and we say the teeing area, it's very lenient in what you can do. I mean, you can rip bits of grass out of the teeing area. You can't do that too many other places if it's going to improve one of your cats. And so the putting green, as you say, is quite a lenient area. But we don't get embedded ball relief on the putting green. But as you say, you can mark the ball, lift it, repair that damage from the ball's impact, and then replace your ball, obviously, on the spot. The fact that he did drop somewhere else, that ball is in play, but he is able to correct that without penalty under rule 14.5 and put it back.
And
but
what
Blakey
if he
shouldn't
didn't
have put
correct
him in that position. But
he shouldn't have put you in that position. But what if this player didn't correct it? Didn't realize that that was making him, he was making a mistake.
I would put forward an argument that that player has played from a wrong place in breach of rule 14.7. And if it wasn't a serious breach, and I would think moving it no closer to the hole, but just off to the side would certainly not be a serious breach. And that would incur the general penalty and you would continue play the hole having played from that wrong place.
Yeah.
So then you'd really have some words to Blakey putting in that position.
Exactly. Yes.
So there's a few rules in play there. And the one that actually, we didn't actually mention the rule number that actually gave us the one stroke penalty was rule 9.4. And that is lifting the ball in play, requiring it to replace it and not putting a ball mark, because that's 14.1 and 9.4. There is an exception to 9.4. In fact, there's five of them. But one of them is you are allowed to lift the ball off the course if you intend to apply a rule, right? Taking better ball relief. But Stuart was unable to take that rule or take that relief in that situation. So that exception did not apply. Okay, so well done. Thank you. And I know that Blakey has a lot of people write in and provide the answer to that golf rules question of the week through the YouTube and through other socials. So that's it. So I'm going to hand over to you, Marcella. And I just hinted before that you do a lot of education on the course, live in front of people. You did a webinar, which is not as common for you just in the last week. But if you just wanted to share with the audience, who are the sort of people, who's your typical person that you're talking with? And then what are some of the really common misunderstandings that they have, you know, coming into the game of golf and trying to understand the rules?
Yeah. So under Girlfriend's Guide to Golf, I teach mostly women, not solely, but mostly women, the rules of golf. And I teach at country clubs and resorts all over the country. I've actually also taught in Scotland at the Renaissance Club and in Mexico a little bit as well. But I go to clubs and spend 2 hours on the course. And we start out in the teeing area. We start before that and talk about preparing for your round and how to be on time, how to have a great pace, and a lot of tips on how to really understand pace of play and what it's going to mean to everyone else behind you that day and how to execute and stay on pace. And then we just start out in the teeing area and we talk about you know, provisional balls and accidental hits there, all the things that can happen in the teeing area, move on to an unplayable lie somewhere. Talk about that penalty relief that we can take and those options, and then some free relief from abnormal course conditions, cart paths, embedded balls. We talk about reasonable stroke, which I've done a video with Blakey on in Tahoe that was a lot of fun. And but whether or not you're always entitled, and the answer is no, you're not always entitled to free relief from an abnormal course condition if it's not a reasonable stroke. So we talk about that and just kind of make our way through bunkers, penalty areas, and all the other situations on the course till we get to the putting green. And then we spend a lot of time there talking about etiquette on the putting green and around the green and parking. And so I have a level one and a level two, and the level one is a lot more about etiquette and foundational things and basic rules. And then level two gets a little more in depth into the rules. And but throughout these 2 hours in each of those cases, we are, you know, taking questions, actually taking drops, going and standing behind a tree, trying to find our nearest point of complete relief from a drain, you know, doing all that stuff. So it's a really helpful way to learn the rules, especially if you're newer and you didn't grow up, because a lot of women can be, you know, very athletic and quickly develop a great golf swing. But these other elements that are so important, which is caring for the course and that golf course behavior or etiquette, and then, of course, those rules, those nasty little rules, we don't get them necessarily as quickly maybe as we develop a nice swing. So trying to keep all of those elements together to help you on your path, because if you're just a great ball striker, you're going to get into some trouble if you don't know about all this other stuff. So that's kind of what I do. And I've been doing it for, I want to say, 5 or 6 years. Time goes so fast, I don't even remember, but it's been a bit now. And it's a blast.
Wonderful. It seems like some of that training you were doing is actually what a club could do almost as a part of induction. You talked about pace of play and the etiquette, which really has very little to do with pace of play. Can be in the rules, having a pace of play policy, but those, some of those things that aren't written, those unwritten rules like etiquette and which is great. So you actually obviously talk about some of those things before you even get into the rule book, don't you? And just how to get them around the golf course at a reasonable pace, doing the right thing, looking after the course and things like that.
Yes. And there's so many COVID golfers, you know, especially women who picked up the game during COVID because they needed something to do and it just exploded. But because of that, the pros at the country clubs and the golf courses were just trying to, you know, kind of manage all of these increased tee times and all the wear and tear on the course and everything else that came with this explosion. And so they didn't necessarily have time to create this curriculum for new players and sort of nurture them along. And so fortunately for me, but unfortunately for, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not more, golfers that are new, they're not getting that. They haven't been getting that. And I have to tell you, as you know, Stu, on the internet, you can sit there and go searching on YouTube and you're going to find some stuff, but it might not be up to date. It might not be accurate, and it might not be a complete story because you get this one line bullet, right? And those aren't enough, as you know, someone who educates on the rules. So it's you can go searching in there, but you still might not get what you really need. So I think really helping people with that foundation the way you and Blakey do is so important.
And as you could appreciate and I can appreciate from doing this podcast, as often as we do, it's on the course where I think the greatest understanding happens, isn't it? It's when you are physically showing someone the ball in the grass, the ball in the bunker. That's where the real understanding happens, I guess, the greatest understanding.
Yes. And I think there's a real disparity between a man who's played off and on since he was young and has been around the golf course. And for some reason, men have more of a photographic memory for holes and scenarios, maybe than women do. And so definitely women like being there and seeing it, seeing the ball in the middle of a bush or right against a tree and not having to picture how that's going to work, you know, with their unplayable options. So yeah, it's really helpful to be on the course.
Okay, so you prepared a list for us today of some of the more commonly misunderstood rules. Would you like to share some of those with us, please?
I would. Gosh, the first one is, it's my favorite, and it becomes all the ladies' favorite, the newer players. Do you want to take a guess at what it is? I don't know if I already told you, but I don't think I did. So take a guess at what the most helpful rule is for a newer player.
I'm thinking playing a provisional ball, but could easily not be that. I'm just stumped.
Stroke and distance. And it's not such a help to you because men tend to say, in fact, on my TikTok, you know, I've got Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, the whole shebang. And when I post things on some of those platforms, some men just jump in and disagree. And so they get mad when I tell ladies, hey, stroke and distance, 18.1 is your best friend because you can use it anywhere on the course at any time. Your ball could be sitting in the middle of the fairway, downhill lie, thick rough. It can be in a bunker. It can be anywhere. And you can go back to the location of your last shot and hit again for one penalty stroke. Number one, people don't believe you can do that with a ball in a bunker. They all go, no, 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 it's two, or you can't do it at all. And then men like yell at me online saying, why don't you just teach the ladies how to hit bunker shots? Well, let's start with, I'm not a coach. Okay. So I can't teach them a swing, and they'll get that later. But sometimes ladies, to speed up pace of play, which is obviously the most important thing in golf, sometimes it's easier for them just to go, oh God, I got in there. Let me drop one right now under stroke and distance at a substituted ball, another ball. I see it plugged in the bunker. It's ugly. I can't deal with that. That bunker's, you know, 7 feet high or whatever, right? I don't like it. Let me just take a drop right here at knee height. And so for that reason, it's fantastic. One stroke for them. We keep our pace going. And when they get up to the ball, when the other ladies are nearby, they can grab their ball, rake their bunker, and they're done. Such a time saver. But men, hate to say, go, oh no, I don't want to lose all the distance. Well, yeah, if you're hitting your shots, you know, 320 yards, okay, yeah, you've lost distance. But the ladies might not necessarily be losing all that distance, just saying.
Yes. So we know how many exceptions there are to so many different rules. And it's one of the situation you've just mentioned, it's one of the very few always in the rules. You always have that option. You always have the option to proceed under stroke and distance, regardless of where your ball is on the course, unless it's in the bottom of the hole, obviously. Yeah. But it's one of those very few always. So that's a really good one to keep in your back pocket, isn't it?
It is. Mm. And so that's one of my favorites. It's the most common misunderstood rule, period. And I actually taught at a club in Northern California, and I give handouts in my clinics. They have handouts. Everything has a rule reference number. It's got little bullets, some images. It's super helpful with lots of tips on pace of play. And so we give them lots of resources. And this is one of the things it's important that I teach, you know, from starting out from the teeing area in lots of places along the way. And literally this woman ended up in a match against a really senior player, woman who'd been playing for like 35 years. And the woman's like, you're wrong. You can't take it out of the bunker for one stroke. And she goes, well, I just learned that in Marcella's clinic. The woman goes, she's wrong. You're wrong. You can't do that. And made this gal cry. So even though it's in black and white and you can look it up under that rule, people can't grasp that you can take it out of a bunker.
As you've mentioned, but there's that whole there's that whole misunderstanding, as you say, about not being, you got to play it from inside the bunker. You're in there, you're stuck. There's no way you can get out.
Right.
Interesting, that conversation between that very senior player and the perhaps newer to the game, almost some intimidation there of, and not knowing her rights as someone in that match and being able to proceed however they want. And if the opposite, you know, the opponent doesn't like it, they have, you know, options at their disposal to request a ruling or something like that.
But, yeah. And I think that a lot of the people that listen to this podcast are rules officials, newer rules officials. In fact, I happen to know someone who's PGA Tour rules official who listens to you guys every week. A big wig, even higher ranking than you, Stu.
Oh, well, that's not saying much.
And club pros, you know, club pros who know the rules and want to learn a little bit more. I think a lot of them listen to your podcast. And I think that these are the things that they're a little bit out of touch about how women are welcomed, so-called, not so much welcomed into the game, and how challenging it can be, and how the intimidation factor from other women who are very good, low handicap senior players, and from men. And that's one of the reasons I do what I do, because I want them to not feel intimidated. As long as your pace is good and you are caring for that course, you can't ignore the damage you're causing and damage other people left. You see it, you fix it. Okay. Fix it right. Whether that's the bunker or out in the fairway or whatever, you fill that sand, right? So if you're doing that and you have a good pace, then you have every bit as much of a right to enjoy that golf course. And so that's what I want. I want people to be considerate and feel, welcome people more and have these ladies feel like, okay, you're not going to intimidate me. I know I can do this and I know I can be here as long as my pace is good, you know?
Exactly. Not holding up the field. I still had someone not so long ago ask me about the decisions book or something to that effect. And, you know, that's before I even started learning the rules. So that just shows how set in their ways, I guess, they can be sometimes. Do you ever think about how many times your name is mentioned on golf courses throughout California? You know, Marcella told me this.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that, but I guess you're right. No, that, yeah, you're right. Probably a lot. And speaking of decisions book, can I just tell you now call clarifications? So a lot of the people that are going to be watching this podcast will be newer audience to you guys because I'll be sharing it on my channels and stuff. But, you know, we all know about the regular rules of golf book. Okay. But and you think everything's in here. And when you study for an exam or you're looking something up as a club pro, whatever, you're doing your thing looking in here. But guess what? Yeah, it's this sucker.
That's
the real deal. And this is a whole other ball of wax. And I think that what separates someone like Blakey and you from me is that I'm like here. You guys are here. In other words, here's the rule, da 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 da. And yet there are some clarifications. There are some exceptions and rulings and this thing happened in whatever year, whatever situation, and here's how you deal with it. So I think that's what makes golf so hard too, is that there's so much to it. There's all these exceptions and little, right? And that's why I think it's so important that when people are asking you a question, their audio question, they can ask here on your website to say, hey, this thing happened to me out there. Or submitting it by texting or messaging Blakey on Instagram or whatever channel is, you know, where was my ball? What area of the course was my ball in? Properly term that. And it wasn't in the junk. And the rough isn't significant, right? General area is rough and fairway and bushes, right? So where was it and what happened and what's my format? Is it stroke play or match play? And is it, you know, individual play or is it a four ball? And you get to that. Okay, now you guys can go and answer that question. You know, you're a club pro at your club, a rules official, and if you're playing in a regional tournament, that's how they're going to get to answer that question, is you give them that foundation. If you don't give them that, they don't know where to start, right? So important to understand that.
You are spot on. And that's how we word the community questions and the golf rules question of the week. You know, it is individual, it's stroke play, it's a match versus Blakey and Stewart, whatever it might be. Okay, stroke and distance was your number one.
Yes.
And it is a really, really good one. What's number two?
And that is your nearest point of complete relief. So most people think if you're going to get, or you're entitled to take, it's your option to take free relief from some sort of abnormal course condition, like a cart path, let's say, most people think that you just, oh yeah, it's a club length. Well, it's actually, first, it's your nearest point of complete relief, and then it's that club length. But you've got to find that nearest point of complete relief. And people want it to be in the nice side. They want it to be in the fairway side, or they want it not to be in a bush, or not to be up against a tree. And so they get a little confused, right, about doing it. So I think that one is, and this is men, women, you know, low handicappers, right?
Yeah. One thing I learned very early on in my rules journey is the lack of correlation between your ability as a golfer and your rules knowledge. I thought if you've been playing golf for X years and you play off plus something and you are elite amateur golfer, you must know the rules really well because you played a lot of golf at a very high level. I very quickly learned that wasn't the case at all. There was like no correlation whatsoever. Right.
And then I also think a lot of people don't keep up to date with the changes, and the changes were so grand for 2019 that a lot of people are just like, oh, throw up their hands. I'm whatever, you know, because it was a lot.
Too much to change over. pardon me. I have called the rules of golf many times a perishable skill. And that is, if you don't maintain that knowledge, you are going to lose it, guaranteed.
Yes. Oh, that's similar to my former background in financial services. If you're not up to date in all the laws and all the acts, then you're in all the documents, you're clueless. So no, it's true. You have to stay up to date, and that's not easy to do, but you guys make it easier. And by the way, I'm sure you're aware that Blakey and I have a podcast together called Golf Rules School. Have you heard it yet or seen it?
Yes, I have. Yes, of course.
Okay, good. And do you think it's a good way to help the newer player?
Of course. Absolutely. And I think that's where that was clearly your target. Clearly, that was your aim. You're not talking about exceptions to this rule, and you're not talking about rule, 10.2B4 and going into that level of detail.
That's my favorite rule, by the way.
I know. I mentioned that deliberately because we spoke about that the other day. You mentioned 10.2B4. And I could even put you on the spot, I'm sure, and ask you what 10.2B4 is.
You can put me on the spot on that one. That one was so good because you know who the first tour player was that had the sort of biggest issue with it when it changed in 2019? The name, because it's not a real common. I had never heard of his name.
Oh, I thought it was going to be a lady because how often a woman's caddy would stand behind. So it wasn't a lady.
John Senden. And I had never heard of him, but anyway, he's a successful tour player. He had the first situation with it on tour in 2019 when that changed. And so for those who don't know, it's my favorite, and it sounds like kind of like sexy talk, 10.2B4. So I love to say it, but what it is when, and it, I think it started because of the women. I think that's why they made the change, the LPGA players, your caddy. And again, when we talk about caddy, it's also your partner. Same kind of rules apply if you're playing in a four ball and you have a partner, but your caddy is not permitted to stand behind you in what's now called a restricted area to help you with alignment. So that would be on the teeing area, any type of fairway shot, on the putting green, anything like that. Not allowed to do that anymore. And when it first came out, no one was used to it because caddies were in the habit of lining everybody up. And so it was a big shocking change, and they've had to make some clarifications. And now there's this sort of restricted area. There's a real term for it. And so if you're there, if your caddy is standing there when you begin to take your stance, which is having at least 1 foot in position, right? So when you do that, if he's there, you're going to incur the general penalty, but you can back off, step away. He can back off, step away, retake your stance, and you're good to go. Reset. Yeah.
I remember when the rule first came out, you couldn't reset. Once you're in position, you couldn't avoid the penalty. but they added a clarification that you could in fact reset by the player stepping away and going back in to take their stance, but which I think was probably a good clarification.
It was. It needed to. It was so strict. But now you can also, if you're there for some other reason, if your caddy is in a bunker behind you, happens to be raking that bunker, and he's not there in that restricted area to line you up, then it's okay. No penalty. Nobody has to back away. So there's a little more intention tied to this one now than there used to be.
I was going to use the example of being on the putting green, but simply facing the other way, checking his phone. But still being on an extension of that line of play and being in the restricted area, but not there for that purpose.
Yes.
That rule is there for.
Yes. So that's my favorite one. Oh, and FYI. So obviously we know that a scramble isn't in sort of the rules of golf. It's not a normal format, but it's such a popular charity and fun way to play. And in a scramble, you are encouraged to stand behind the other players on your team and watch that line. By the way, it was also not just help them line up, but you gain information. So if you're playing in a four ball and you're there in the restricted area to gain information for your next shot, same thing, penalty. But in a scramble, you can do that and you should, right? Everybody's helping each other out. And you're going to watch those putts roll in so you know that line. So I tell people, be very careful. Understanding, just knowing that, you know, you don't need to know that it's 10.2 before, but know that you can only do this in a scramble, and don't get into a bad habit of doing it. And because you play all these scrambles, and then when you're in a real format in real golf, you do it. Now you're in trouble.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah.
Very good. Your next one. Yes, please.
This one's, it's kind of an emotional one, I think. People think that they can ignore certain rules because they don't find them significant. So ignoring them for themselves, kicking their ball if it's, you know, in the rough a little bit, or taking it out of a divot, or picking up to identify it and not putting a mark down, or you know, not being too careful about taking maybe a drop from a penalty area or something, not being careful about what height and where they're dropping, you know, those kinds of things. Or sometimes let me drop for, you know, lateral relief from a penalty area. And you know what, it's going to roll and roll twice. So I'm just going to place it. I'm not going to go through that drop, right? So thinking that it's okay to ignore certain rules, but then they see somebody else do something and then they're first to point out their finger going, oh, you can't do that. Well, how do you pick and choose?
Exactly. I've been on a committee, which I spoke about on this very podcast very, very early on, about being in a position where clearly a breach of it from a player, and I took it to the committee and the committee all sided with the player. And immediately I said to the committee, held up the old book, the 2019 book, held it up and I said, oh, okay, that's interesting. Can you just tell me the other rules in this book you're prepared to not enforce? Just give me a list now. We'll all be on the same page. Just tell me which other ones are you not prepared to back. And of course, silence in the room, nothing. So I was just making the point that how do you pick and choose? Right. It's a clear breach. Everyone knew it. But they weren't prepared to enforce the penalty. I couldn't believe it. I was speechless.
Yeah, I think that's, So this is your committee.
I was the club captain at the time. I could have just probably gone and done the penalty, and on reflection, I probably should have, but I thought, you know, just nicer. It'd make me feel more comfortable if I got the backing of the committee for all of them to go, yes, that's definitely a penalty, no question, put it on. So it's a committee decision, took it to the committee and voted 5-0, no penalty. And that's when I've just held up the book and I've gone, can you tell me the other ones? Like, and we know the committee is always right, even when they're wrong. And they were wrong on that occasion.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And I think that's why it's so helpful for not only people to know the rules, but then to be able to, you know, reference them like in a little booklet or whatever, like this one, for example, but be able to just pull it up so that you're not going, hey, that's not right. But you're actually going, I think it's right here. 10 point whatever, right? And you're showing it to them so that they can see it in black and white. And then they're not calling, you're not calling them. It's like, let me just bring it to your attention and then you can call it on yourself. because it's a golf is a game of integrity.
Yeah, at that basic level, that's sort of level one, getting into the game. Do you even mention playing a second ball in stroke play if they're unsure of how to proceed, or is that just going to complicate it that bit too much?
Yeah, so I wait until I get those advanced questions. So sometimes in the level one, I have some people who've been playing a little bit longer, and so I'll get the questions. So when the questions come in that are slightly higher level, then we go over them. And I do provide it in my handouts, but I don't always talk about it because I do say it's a little bit complicated because, you know, it is complicated. It's definitely in our level two, and when you can play that second ball, in 20.1, is it C?
C3, you're very good.
Okay. Yeah. Versus in match play, right? Which I guess is B, right?
20.1B2 is requesting a rule.
Okay, B2. Yes. Okay. So anyway, I do explain that there's a difference and just making sure that they understand that you can't always play those two balls in. But yeah, we usually bring it up in level two. And that's, you know, that's a little complicated. And that's why I think if you're newer to the game and you're learning to have a great swing and you just love it and you want to be out there and you want to wear all the matching outfits and do all, you know, be involved in the camaraderie and all the fun and fluff and beauty that women get in our tournaments because they're so pretty and the food's amazing. And
so much color.
Yeah, it's amazing. So you should pick a partner who is seasoned. It's not necessarily the one who's going to look the best in the same outfit as you. It's really the one who has competed before and she can give you some advice on, you know, hey, right. So I that's what I like to recommend. And then I know you guys have talked about this a lot. Thinking that you can declare a ball lost. That's definitely top two misunderstood rules in the world and just going, oh yeah, that's a lost ball.
Yeah. So one of my first videos I did for Blakey was Charlie Hull playing in Dubai, I think, and ball search, not 3 minutes yet. And then she, excuse me, was saying, oh, look, I'll go back and play another one. And they've gone, oh, hang on. I think it's here. They're finished. She goes, oh, well, it doesn't matter now because I've called it. That's what I think she said, that I've called it. In other words, I've already determined that ball is lost. I can't now play it. Even at that level, I think it is probably one of the most, has to be one of the greatest myths in the rules of golf, misunderstood.
Can we just go through that for a second? Cause it's such a juicy one. Okay. So when this clock is starting, when the player, their caddy, and or if they have a partner in a four ball, go to the area that they believe the ball to be, the clock starts. And it essentially, very little will stop the clock, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very little will stop it. So that begins. But you can still go hit a provisional after someone started searching for a minute or whatever, right? You can go back to that. That's newer. That wasn't the case Correct. Before. So that's yes. kind of cool. But then that... a very not well-known fact that clock doesn't exist for the other players. Can you talk about that for a second? So the clock is ticking for me, but yes. my opponent or fellow competitor can find it after the three.
So has the, in this situation, has the clock started at all?
Started. My caddy went to that bush and started looking for my ball.
Okay. So once that 3 minutes is up, that ball is now, its status changes from your ball in play, assuming you haven't put another ball into play, from the ball in play to now lost. So even if it's found after that 3 minutes, it's still a lost ball. I think that's where you're going at with that question. Someone else can find it, but it doesn't matter. It's lost. Is that what you mean?
It is. And what about in that provisional situation where I've hit a provisional and I love my provisional? Right. The first ball looks to be either OB or could be lost somewhere on the course other than a penalty mm-hmm. area. And so I'm like, OK, well, I'm not even going to go look for it. I'm just going to go ahead and hit a provisional. And I stripe a provisional down the middle of the fairway, farthest I've ever hit it on this hole. It just rolls yep. and I love it. And I'm like, don't look for it.
Right. But they go ahead and look for it?
They start looking for it. And they find it 3.5 minutes later after they start looking. It's assuming more than 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So assuming your provisional ball has not become the ball in play, you need to go and identify that ball because your 3 minutes hasn't started. They could find it at 5 minutes.
That's right.
You know, the clock hasn't started because you didn't start searching for it.
That's right. So it's only the player, their caddy or partner that start that clock. There's no clock for anybody else. And that's another one that people don't really understand. They think that there's a clock. There's not a clock for them. And if stuff's going on and other players haven't hit yet and somebody else is looking for a ball and for whatever reason, tick, 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 it's been 3.5 minutes since they started searching, but I never wanted them to search because I loved my provisional. So it's been 3.5 minutes and they go, oh, and I go, oh, it's already been 3.5 minutes. It's too late. And they go, no, it's not too late. This is your ball. Come on over here, little girl.
I'll give you another example, more extreme example to help for people to understand the rule even better. You're on a par four, your provisional ball could be sitting right next to the hole and you could be on the green with that ball next to the hole. And your original ball.
Wait, say that again. So par four. Sure. I think so my ball's lost.
You now drive way right into some very horrible territory. And we hit the provisional, but we just ease off a little bit. We hit a 3-wood or a 4-iron instead of our driver. So it's definitely further back, closer to the teeing area than where our original ball is going to be. We walk up and go, there's no way I want to find that. This is sitting in the middle of the fairway, and you make a stroke at your provisional ball onto the green and your ball is now 6 inches from the hole. You could walk onto the green and it's now 10 minutes since you hit that original tee shot. You could be on the green with your provisional ball there up near the hole and someone could find your ball and go, we found it. And you could be going, no, my provisional's right here. My provisional's the ball in play, but it's not the ball in play. The two reasons. Number one, your 3 minutes search time did not start. So there hasn't been any search time. And you did not play that provisional ball or make a stroke at that provisional ball at a spot closer to the hole than where your original ball is estimated to be. So it's still a provisional ball.
Right. There's
another example of no clock running. And it could be 10 minutes. Someone finds it. And you now have an obligation to go back and trudge through that thick grass and go, yeah, that's mine. Great.
Right.
Right. Original ball's now out because your original ball's been found and identified. Yeah.
And that's
just taking that to another level. Yeah.
Right. And that's a par four, which is a great example because that next shot could probably get it onto the green. Just say it's a par five and I hit now two shots, one of them from closer to the teeing area, not closer to the hole than the original ball is thought to be. And then I hit it again, now a second time, closer to the hole than the original ball was thought to be. Now it's my ball in play.
Correct. Spot on. Right. Definitely. It is now. Yeah. So the original ball is now abandoned. It's the wrong ball every day of the week. It's a wrong ball and cannot be played. Yeah, no, that's right. So because that stroke at the provisional has been made at a spot closer to the hole than where the original is estimated to be. So it's now the ball in play. Run up and hit it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, very good. So you've gone through some of your experiences, you know, on the course in front of a lot of people with varying degrees of experience in the game and a lot of newcomers who just want to learn about etiquette and pace of play and caring for the course and some of those very common rules that beginners misunderstand. I also know you've brought some clubland stories from your own experiences where people have contacted you and said, Marcella, I need your help. This person said this. I don't think that's correct. What's the answer, please? Have you got the first one there handy you'd like to share with us? I think I've got it here myself, but you've got it there somewhere.
Yes. So this just I think it was 2 days ago, Kathy, who's a sweet gal and does know a lot about the rules. She said last week in match play, my opponent's ball was in a red penalty area. Her stance was outside of the penalty area, which is in the general area in this case. And she was standing in temporary water to try to hit that ball as it lied in the penalty area. And so this opponent wanted to get free relief for being having to stand in this temporary water, this little puddle. So the question is she entitled to that, or what are her options?
And so what did the player actually end up doing?
Luckily, the player took lateral relief because she thought about going, well, they, I guess they had some discussion about back on the line and they weren't agreeing, which is another thing people really get off on their direction with back on the line from a penalty area for some reason. And so they talked about the option of going backstroke and distance and thought, oh, it just takes too long. Let me go ahead with a drop lateral relief within two club lengths of the point that it last crossed the edge, no closer to the hole. And that's what they did. Now, in this case, it got her out of this puddle somehow. So she was fine. So she did the right thing. No issue, no penalty. But later on, they're like, I really think I should have gotten free relief. And they went into the pro after the fact and said, you know, Kathy told me that this is what I needed to do, but I really think I should have gotten. So turns out, you know, Kathy was correct, but she could have taken her drop within that two lateral club lengths of where the ball last crossed the edge of the penalty area. And then at that point, when the ball was now at rest, if she had some sort of interference now from temporary water, well, now she's got an option to take relief from that. But that is nearest point of complete relief in the general area. She can't end up with a stance, even if she liked her stance, she couldn't end up with a stance inside the penalty area. It has to be complete relief from that abnormal course condition.
So the player's ball was lying in the penalty area, but their feet were standing in temporary water in the general area. And they go, hey, we get relief from abnormal course conditions in the general area. Temporary water is in the general area. I'm entitled to free relief. But of course, Marcella, we know that's not the case. What do we say? It's not the location of the abnormal course condition that is important. It is the location of something else that's important. And what's that?
The ball?
Correct. Yeah, of course. Yeah,
that one was too easy.
No, it's the ball. It's the location of the ball that is everything. And I think there's a common misunderstanding, even amongst rules officials, because I've seen it, unfortunately. People think you cannot get relief from an abnormal course condition in a penalty area. But if your ball's in a general area and you're standing on a sprinkler or a steel grate inside a penalty area, but your ball's in the general area, you're entitled to free relief. But they see that drain or sprinkler, oh, no, that's in the penalty area. You don't get relief for abnormal course conditions in the penalty area. You can, yes, get relief from abnormal course conditions anywhere. It's where your ball, location of your ball is everything, not the abnormal course condition.
Right. And I think that one, to just further clarify, so when you see an electrical box or a sprinkler head in a penalty area, and we say you never get free, unless there's a local rule, you never get free relief from that ball in the penalty area. Well, that is true, but that's if the ball was in there too, right? And so what you're saying, correct, is, yeah, stance is in there, the ball's in the general area, so it's a general area rule that applies, not the penalty area rule. So therefore,
spot on.
Yeah. Therefore you get to take that relief if you have interference with your swing or stance.
So in the end, it sounds like in that particular situation, in that match, the correct result happened in the sense of they were able to work it out themselves, took lateral relief from the penalty area for the penalty of one stroke. And then whether they needed to take relief from the temporary order or not, doesn't really matter, but they did take correct procedure.
Yes. And for further detail, if they wouldn't have agreed on this ruling and they wanted to go in and say, look, she made me do it this way, but I didn't agree, and they're in a match, how does that go?
So, you know, you mentioned before about a more senior player and perhaps, for want of a better term, intimidating their opponent. And saying, no, this is different. I've been playing golf. You know, this is how you do it. if you and I were playing a match and you intimidated me and said, I know the rules, and you can't do this. And I go, oh, okay, I'll do that. I'll follow your procedure that you're, I've got no recourse because it's my ball and I'm choosing what to do with it, regardless of how I came up with that decision, whether you intimidated me or not. I've made that decision to proceed that way. But of course, if I don't agree, I can proceed how I feel I want to proceed. And if you have an issue with that, you of course then can request a ruling. And I learned this early on where in that position, if I was to say with you, look, I don't agree with you, I'm going to do it this way. And you then say, okay, no problem. I'm going to request a ruling on this and we'll work it out later. It then puts the responsibility, the onus back on me to make sure that, hang on, how confident am I of this? Because if I'm in two minds, I'm now running the risk of playing from a wrong place and, of course, automatically losing the hole. Am I that confident in my understanding of the rules? So it's this back and forth between you telling me what I can do, I don't agree, I'm going to do my thing, you go, okay, I'm going to request a ruling, and I'm going, oh, hang on, I'm not so sure of that rule anymore.
Right. And that's when you're going to look it up. You're going to look it up on your USGA app. You're going to look it up in the book that you have or your little cheat sheet here. You're going to look it up on something and you're going to take a second to do that. And do you have the time to do that? Well, you do have the time to do that. If you're playing efficiently and ready golf and keeping up with the group ahead of you the whole rest of the time, if you're not finishing that story about your daughter and the thing about the class that she didn't get, and then the guy that didn't call. And, you know, if you're telling those stories, you don't have time to look up a rule. You don't have time to take a second practice swing. You don't have time to walk around the hole, right? To look at that, you know, that break. But if you're not doing those things and you're playing golf, being friendly, but playing golf, being efficient, being ready to hit, getting dropped off on the cart if you're in carts, if you're doing those things correctly and efficiently, then you do have a second to look up a rule, right? You do have a second to try to call the pro. You do have a second to take that practice swing. And so that's kind of how I look at it. You can't do all that. You can't be a high handicapper and tell all these stories during, you know, the course of the round. You can't be answering your phone, texting your friends, thinking about, you know, what outfits you're going to wear for the member next month. You know, I mean, you want to talk about that and you should, but you want to do it, you know, on the 19th hole. So I think the other thing that happens, and certainly with the ladies that I teach in the girlfriends golf experiences on courses, is that you have to know what it feels like to have a good pace. And men too. I don't want to single ladies out and say that ladies are slow and men are fast, which is completely not true. But when you're hitting more strokes, right, you have a higher score because you're newer to the game. You don't have great skill level yet. You're not putting for birdie every time, right? So when you're doing that, that logically takes more time. So you don't have time to have conversations. You can't do both. And men are slow for different reasons, but, you know, men make up time because they drop another ball and don't tell anybody else they did. They miraculously find their ball that wasn't really their ball. They do. They kick their ball out of a divot. They do. Men cheat more than women. I'm just saying. Ouch. It's true. Okay. You don't.
We'll talk about the evidence to back that up.
Lakey doesn't, but you guys do. I got videos. I got videos of all of it.
Oh, very good. We'll discuss them later, I think, when watch some videos of people cheating.
Yes.
Well, that's a good one, and that's a pretty straightforward one. But I could understand the confusion of the, you know, which area of the course the abnormal course condition was in and which area of the course the ball was in. And I could so easily see a person being confused by that situation. I think your second Clubland story is juicier. And do you have it there handy? This is at a club championship. And this is, I believe, the defending champ. So here is an elite golfer who did something a little bit odd on the putting green. What did they do?
So it was the club championship, the first hole. It was the defending champion. She put her putter down, which hit the ball. And then she made a stroke at the ball as if it was a putting stroke. She putted it in and then says, give me whatever penalty. By the time we played 18 holes, she changed her story. She should have taken a penalty for not replacing the ball before holing out. She holed out without replacing the ball. Should have been DQ'd for not correcting her mistake, I believe. So this is a question. She's saying, what's the scoop? She believes she double hit it, and she believes the woman even intimated that she double hit it, which isn't a penalty. But go on.
So my understanding when I first read that question was the player has put their putter head down towards the ball and has accidentally hit the ball in preparation for making their next stroke. And so they've hit the ball on top or to the side, and that has moved the ball. The ball has come to rest on another spot. And almost immediately afterwards, they've then putted to almost disguise the fact that they've moved the ball. The comments about, well, give me whatever penalty you think, immediately says to me that that player knew that there was an error in judgment very quickly. They've lapsed and gone, oh, probably shouldn't have done that. I've done something wrong. It was almost an admission of, I haven't proceeded correctly here. So my initial take was they've accidentally moved the ball on the putting green and then made a stroke with the intent for that stroke to count. That's a putt. That counts. But as the person has hinted at, they probably shouldn't have putted it from that spot. They should have replaced the ball from the spot where it just was. And in doing so, they've played from a wrong place. So I didn't see it so much as a double hit, which we know is allowed. It was more an accidental movement of the ball, not replacing the ball, and then making a stroke at that ball from a wrong place. Then if it goes down the wrong place path, you then have to determine whether it was a serious breach or not. And I suspect it moving an inch to the side or forward would not be deemed a serious breach. And you just hole out from having played from that wrong place. But of course, you do incur the general penalty. There's no penalty for moving the ball in the first place. But even if there was, it would be wrapped up in the general penalty for playing from a wrong place. I mean, the committee would definitely have to ask the player the question of, can you describe what happened? And I think the fact that two others saw it, you mentioned one, but I think there were two others who said that wasn't a stroke, that first one. She just accidentally moved that ball, which is fine. That's one of the exceptions to 9.4, accidental movement on the green. You can be the clumsiest golfer in the world on the putting green and move your ball all over the place and not get a penalty. You can be that clumsy with it.
Right.
But you need to put it back. You need to replace it. With no penalty. And I would suspect in this case, the player didn't do that. So no penalty for moving it accidentally, but there is definitely a penalty for making a stroke, playing from a wrong place, hole out, but you've got to add two for playing from a wrong place, not disqualification, because I don't think it's a serious breach.
Right. And so I think that serious breach thing is not necessarily super well understood.
Now, 14.7, you know, you need to always make the stroke where your ball just came to rest, right? Unless the rules allow you to put it somewhere else. And so if you don't do that and you put it somewhere else when you're not allowed to, you play from a wrong place. And rule 14.7 simply says in playing from the wrong place, you need to determine whether the player gained a significant advantage from playing from that wrong place. And you'll find in most cases it's not. They're just 5 yards to the left or they're over there. They haven't advanced the ball 200 yards to gain a significant advantage. But if they have gained a significant advantage, therefore it's a serious breach and you need to correct that serious breach. You need to play a ball from where it should have been played from in the first place.
Right.
Where not a serious breach, you don't have to correct it.
It was a good
one.
Can
I take that a step further?
Yeah.
Just seeing we're on the 14.7 path, it goes on to say that if you don't know whether it's a serious breach or not, it's one of the other situations in which you can actually complete a hole with two balls. One with correcting, one with not, and the committee can work it out later. Anyway,
that actually happened to me in a tournament in 2018, and it was a local rule only at that time. If you accidentally cause your ball to move, that there's no penalty. And we knew it to be a local rule in this member tournament and at this club in Tahoe. So we knew it to be, and my partner was putting for a four for two, right? It was a par five. She got two strokes. So she was putting for a four for two and she was so excited. It was a very short putt. And she was so excited that she accidentally tipped it and then went, whoops, and the ladies we were playing with go, you know, they're ready to just be so excited because they're very competitive ladies. They were ready to be so excited that we blew it, that Deb wasn't going to get that four, that birdie for two. And we knew that it was a local rule. And we go, oh, okay, well, we'll just replace it. And they go, no, that's not da 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 da. So we go, okay, let's play two balls in. And so that's exactly what we did. And of course, you know, I had my knowledge even back then. And so usually that particular pro would call me for other issues on the course. And so we called him, and knowing that he would then call me. So it's like, we knew the answer, and he's like, yeah, no, you're right. And you're good. And so she made her four for two, but that was at that time, just a local rule. And it's now part of the rules of golf. Thank goodness.
Agreed. Really good rule. And we know you've got to be so careful around your ball.
Yeah.
You know, everywhere else on the course, but just on the green. I don't know. There's a lot of, the balls are right next to each other in a lot of cases, ball markers, people, caddies. It's just a lot of things happening.
Yeah.
On that green in such a confined space. I do like the idea if it's accidental.
Yeah.
As I said, you can be the clumsiest golfer. Just make sure you put it back, which I suspect the person in your club champs or that club champ example you mentioned did not do that. And I, you know, again, when the player said, oh, give me whatever penalty, there was that admission of, you know, probably didn't do the right thing there.
Right.
Probably could have done something a bit differently there, or, yeah, anyway.
Yes, yes.
Do you know what happened in the end with that particular case?
I don't, but I will be following up with her and I'll let you know.
And, you know, the situation there, you know, the committee could then call in the other players and say, what did you think you saw? What did you see? You know, she thinks she made a stroke and then another stroke. I would think the witnesses, the other players, would say that first move wasn't a stroke. There was no intention there to make a putt. The putt was, you know, 18 foot and she just touched it. That wasn't a putt for 18 foot. You know, that sort of, so they obviously the committee would gather information from the other players and what they saw. And the, you know, the marker has a responsibility as the eyes and ears of the committee, obviously, to have their input as well. But it'd be interesting to see what happens, especially in such an event with obviously some reasonable stakes in a club champ.
Yes.
In the club champions. Club championships, I should say. Okay, well, I had some community questions I was going to go through, but I think we're probably coming to a time where we need to think about drawing this to a close, and we won't tell Blakey, but we might actually just schedule another podcast for the next week, and we might, you and I could do number 99 as well, but that'd, I think we're only fitting that Blakey comes back for 100. So
yeah.
I might save up some of those community questions for next time. I'll get some more club lands. I reckon with how often you get contact from people, I'm sure you might have one or two more club land stories as well to share with us and share
definitely
with all the listeners.
Definitely.
Okay, well, with that in mind, I've asked you to, as our guest today, to actually write up and deliver this episode's golf rules question of the week. Marcella, do you have that handy, please?
I do. Okay, this is not Wombat Hills. This is a real course. So Sharon and Nina are playing in an individual stroke play tournament at the Santa Luz Club in San Diego with two other competitors in their foursome. Sharon pulls her tee shot on the eighth hole and thinks she'll find her ball in the bushes. After the other ladies tee off, Sharon starts looking for and finds her ball about 90 seconds. Her ball is just beyond a white OB stake. Not wanting to go all the way back to the tee, Sharon assumes she can use model local rule E5 and drop a ball into the fairway for a two-stroke penalty, which she does. The other ladies weren't aware that Sharon's ball was found out of bounds until Sharon casually mentioned it on the ninth tee, which actually happens to be across a long street and a great distance from the eighth hole. At that time, the other ladies informed Sharon that if her ball was OB, she would not be allowed to drop it in the fairway, as model local rule E5 was not in effect at that course. Since Sharon didn't want to slow the group down behind her, she said, you know, let me just take an eight and we'll move on. There you go.
So the question is, how does Sharon proceed? What is her score for that hole?
Yes.
What must she do?
Yes.
Very good. Wow. And that happened for real?
No.
That's a real situation. Oh, very
but
good.
It's no, a you real mentioned the course.
No, no, that's good. Well, you mentioned the real course, and I thought, oh, I think this may have happened. Poor Sharon. Anyway, no, thank you, Marcella, for delivering episode 98, Golf Rules Question of the Week. I know we'll have some people have a go at that. They can look up Model Local Rule E5 and see exactly what that is. That was introduced 2019, almost certain.
Yeah.
That Model Local
Rule. Could have been 2020. I can't recall.
So that Model Local Rule and how that may or may not apply to Sharon's situation on that eighth hole there. Thank you very much, Marcella, for the question. We'll get some people jumping in and trying to answer that. Well, Marcella, I must say a very, very big thanks. Thank you very much for coming along and spending some time with us on the Golf Rules Question podcast today, episode 98. I hope you've enjoyed it. It sounds like you have. It's been great to have you on. So thank you very much for your time.
It's been super fun. Thank you. I'm a huge fan of yours, obviously, and Blakey's as well. So I'm excited. Hopefully we'll do another one soon. And hopefully you'll join us on the Golf Rules School podcast as well.
That would be my pleasure. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Wherever you are listening to your podcasts or watching us on YouTube, it's been great to have your company. And we look forward to talking again, hopefully not too far away, on episode 99. Thanks very much.